Okay, I believe it's working again. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
So he wanted to go around the chapters?
Yeah, so he went around to all the chapters and did what he could to boost the membership, and it turned out that the membership doubled that year, mostly thanks to his efforts.
Oh, yeah. Now, who paid for him to do this?
He did. And he had no money. He just sort of sponged off people as he went. And but he was my angel, and I don't know, you know what was motivating him or how he did all that he did, but the membership doubled during the time that I was president. And, you know, all these little miracles kept happening. And it's fascinating.
Yeah. I wonder what his... I would hope you can remember his name. Maybe by the time you edit the transcript, it'll come to you.
Yeah, my memory's not completely gone. It just won't come when I want it to. You don't have that trouble yet.
No, I do all the time.
Oh, it didn't happen to me until about 2 years ago, but boy, it's happened.
ADI's...
John Deere. His name was John Deere.
John Deere?
Uh-huh.
As in the tractor?
As in the tractor, yeah.
Interesting. I'll have to see what I can find on him. In the literature, you don't know what happened to him.
No, he was not a national. He was not a U.S. national. He was a national, and he just disappeared.
But just went around and talked up ADI.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did you handle? We talked a little bit about this. Five kids, ADI president, working on medlars. I don't know how you did that.
People used to ask me that, and I'd say, don't ask a centipede how it knows what leg to put down next.
Yeah.
I just did it. Yeah. And I had wonderful help from my mother-in-law, who was, you know, a wonderful grandma to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was home a good part of the time to help out with emergencies of all kinds, but he's always detached. He didn't want to do things, you know, show the kids how to do things or have them do them with him. He said, no, I can do it better myself, which was true. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't interested in the kids at that level at that time. He still isn't. He's still aloof. But he's a lovely man. And the kids all loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And he did interesting things for them. When they'd come home from school and have a paper to write, he'd say, well, let's go to the library and look for something that you could write about. Help you get a book. And he would do that. And we had a kid who lived down the road. His parents didn't care about him, and he wasn't doing well in school. And so he only read comic books, and he was the only thing he knew how to read. And so he went to the library with our kids one time with my husband, and he got out some comic books. And our kids said, you won't let us take comic books. And Dad said, how do you know? I don't think you've ever tried. And they said, well, you're not supposed to read comic books. And Dad said, if that's the only thing you know how to read, it's a good thing to read, because the more you read, the more you learn. And first thing you know, he won't read comic books anymore. He'll read other things. And the forecast came to pass. And the kids never stopped being impressed with the fact that Rich learned to read.
Mm.
And Rich stopped one time, you know, years ago now, but he was grown up, and he came to thank Dad for doing that for him. So it made such a difference in his life.
Interesting.
You know, so Dad had insights that maybe nobody else had. But he just was a different kind of dad.
Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about SLA, ADI relations. During the time you were president, basically the discussions just about merger and possibilities continued on.
After Pete's death, they pretty well were over.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, I think...
He was president in 63, 64, is that right?
He was president when he died in 64.
Uh-huh.
And Gene... I knew his name when I said it earlier.
Jackson.
I think got kind of sick at the same time. He lived much longer.
Right.
But I think he went through an illness right about then, and that just put the kibosh on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to handle the way that I was handling. I really had a pocketful.
As far as I know, the final discussions came to an end in 69 or 70.
But they were mostly posturing rather than acting.
Well, no, they were pretty close. There was an actual merger declaration.
Yeah, maybe I did know that.
I was active at that time in SLA.
I see.
And I've also, do you know Martha Jane Thacker? Do you recognize her name? She was my mentor at Florida State in the master's program there. And she and I did the 75th anniversary history of SLA.
I see.
And so that's how I happen to remember that.
Okay.
Speaking of history, you have this long interest in the history of information science, or I should say frustration in trying to get folks interested in the history of information science. How did this interest begin? Was it when you were president, trying to figure out this documentation of documentation?
No, I guess Watson Davis to thank for that. He invited me to his office. You know, he was on the outs with ADR for a long time. He didn't want to even talk to anybody. And I can't remember how I met him, but we liked each other. I mean, you know, the first time you meet somebody, you know whether you got a chemistry with them or whether you don't. And he liked me. And his office, at one point, ADI had headquarters on N Street. It was for a short time. And Watson Davis' office was on N Street, about a block down the street. And so he called me one day and asked me to come for lunch. I said, well, eat in my office. I have some things I want to show you. And so I went, and I can't see well enough. And so we sat on the floor together in front of his bookcase, and he just got out one document after another from the history of starting ADI and showed them to me and said, here, you can have a copy of this, and a copy of this, and a copy of this. And I left with a big stack of papers. And he said, I don't know what you're going to do with these, but I just want to see what you're going to do with these. And so then I wrote that history of ADI that got published in American Documentation.
Yeah.
And that kind of got me started, and I wanted to. And then I had this student, Paul Garwick, who was at Dick Orr's outfit with me, Institute for the Advancement of Medical Communication. And he said, you know, your paper ought to be updated. And I said, okay, do it. And he got working on it, and the two of us together got our names put in the paper, and we updated it a little bit, and then various other people, especially Irene Farkas Khan, got interested in taking one farther. I didn't want to become a historian. I just was trying to do Watson Davis a favor and put things in perspective in accordance with what he had been telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it wasn't lost, because he died soon after that.
Yeah, yeah. We had his son come talk to the history group at ACES last year in Baltimore.
Oh. I don't know if you know, Calvin Moores is his son-in-law.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Moores was supposed to come.
Oh.
But
she didn't come.
She backed out. And supposedly the brother was going to cover both of their perspectives, but we wanted to hear about Calvin Moores and about Watson Davis, but instead we heard about Watson Davis. I'm hoping we can still talk Mrs. Moores in the coming sometime.
Yeah, it would be nice, because she's a long-suffering soul.
Yeah. Now, what happened to the stuff you copied? You used it, and is it still in your files?
Yeah, it's still in my file.
Mm-hmm. Out of Babbage.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's still there.
If you were doing the history of information science, what would you do?
Golly, I don't know. Information science, not ADI.
Right.
Races. Well, I'd try to find where the roots were. And I don't know where the roots were offhand. And then build on them however I could by tracing not only a mechanization, but other ideas that are fundamental to what we're doing. Because the thing that changed, information science changed early on, was the fact that books are not the only kind of documents, and journals are not only, books and journals are not documents, and books and journals and patents are not necessarily all the documents, and we can't. And it doesn't have to be scientific, you know, and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd look for ways of showing where it all came together, like in the Bibliothèque of Paris and that kind of thing, maybe even the Library of Congress, where they bring it all together in one place. And then what do? When you have that great big conglomeration of stuff, how do you find what you're looking for? And the Library of Congress has been working very hard, you know, worked very hard to try to solve that. And I don't know the extent to which they won yet. And I don't know that it matters anymore about physical access to documents. You know, if H.G. Wells, you know, thought there would be one library all on film. And that seemed, you know, seemed passe, and it seemed very desirable. And now we're thinking about everything being in digital form and being available worldwide or being on the net. And we just have one big library, and that's information science. I mean, that's information at least. But people are having a terrible time struggling with getting stuff off the net, as far as I can understand it. It's just a great big mess. It's not a, an organized collection of any kind. At least it's not very organized. It's, and so I think I'd look into all those factors and try to make some kind of sense out of it. I don't know if I could or not. What would be your approach?
Mine is to come talk to the roots. I consider you one of the roots, as you said.
I'm not a root.
Yeah.
Just a weed along the way.
A weed along the way. Well, you know, all depends on what you call information science. In our faculty meetings, we used to spend a fair amount of time talking about this, and we're not even predominantly an information science program. But in terms of putting together the subject area and the way of handling that information, the ideas, not just the machines. So I think the machines are important because they make you think about the ideas. And sometimes we've done so much in the library side that we stop thinking about the ideas of what we're doing. Instead, we look at the systems.
Right,
and the machines. And so when you go to a new machine, it makes you think about what are you doing. And I think the folks like you in the 50s were trying to figure out what are the ideas that are in information.
That are fundamental.
Right, that are fundamental. And because you had to think about those when you went to all these different machines. And so, say, what's bothering me now is sorting out, keeping track of the, what I consider the basic ideas. And because there are so many machines that I think, I haven't heard about that machine yet, I've got to find out about it, you know. And so my answer to your question is I'm trying to deal with it in lots of different ways. I think oral history is one way, but I think the most important way is to make sure that you still have the papers of folks like you.
Yeah,
and that's why I'm working so vigorously on that.
And so you're talking about the history of the field. And there's always this so nebulous, what does information science mean?
Right. When I say the field, I mean both the professional aspect, but I mean the discipline aspect.
Right.
And that's why say, I put you into the discipline aspects, because your information retrieval really is the core of what the discipline is about. And I'm still, by the way, trying to sort out that in terms of who used that term in print first, though Moore's claimed
it.
Well, I just had a letter from Cleverdon the other day, and what he was saying, he thought he was the first one in print with it, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I have to now sort that out.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Speaking of this, someone that I've been reading, I don't remember now, so has characterized much of the early information retrieval work, all this stuff on semantic factoring, telegraphic abstracts, coding manuals, controlled vocabularies, as focus on machine capabilities of the period rather than those fundamental concepts. How do you react to that?
I think that's a bit shallow, because my interest in thesaurus was never focused on machines at all. It's focused on a core of literature and a core of users and what would get the two together, not how you did the getting them together. Because it depends on how people ask questions and what the words are in the literature that you want to retrieve. And sometimes the absolute words don't express the concept that the person is trying to get to when they ask their question. And I find it just intellectually fascinating, and I doubt that there'll ever be an end-all, be-all to vocabulary building that you could ever get the vocabulary that would fit the whole world all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not going to be such a thing. So I think it's logical to divide it into some sort of segment where you do focus on a particular set of users and try to serve those users well. And since the set of users tends to change within itself, you know, and as time marches on, interest changes, and it's just a sort of insoluble problem, but you just grasp it as you can.
Now, I gather you were very much a fan of Moore's approach toward the user as the basic entity. And
I guess I was. I mean, we had so many fights that I wasn't sure I liked him even, or, you know, bought his ideas. But I think underneath I was buying practically everything that he was buying. You know, that we were kindred souls in that respect. Mm-hmm. And he helped to point some of these things out to me that I wouldn't have learned as early, at least, as I do.
You know, the interesting thing strikes me, and say I've done a fair amount of work in the history of SLA and of special librarianship, is that those folks in the early development phases of SLA in the early 1900s remind me of the folks like you in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
They were really
first
user-oriented, and they were discipline-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever techniques and whatever equipment and whatever kinds of information you needed, you went and found. Did you know much about that early period of SLA? Or?
No, I must say I haven't. I mean, we didn't get taught any history at Drexel.
Yeah.
And I've never really looked into it as much as I should have. So I can't speak to that, but I know that they did a lot of the same things earlier, and they did them slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've all had the same goals in mind, and that we're not all that different from one another.
Mm-hmm. But they seem to be, I used the phrase in my article, that they were more like librarians than they were like information specialists. Special librarians were more librarians than they were special.
They were chained to books and journals, weren't they? Particular kinds of literature.
Well,
because that's what librarians, in my mind, are, people who deal with
books,
printed
and journals,
literature.
Printed,
mm-hmm.
What are your predictions, hopes, expectations about the future of information science?
But it'll just keep evolving. I don't know how it will, but I think the internet is an indication of how drastically it can change in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to know what it's doing in Paris right now, you can get a picture and see. And that kind of thing that we never would have thought of 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to know what's happening on Mars, you just look at the computer and you can see a picture of what's going on right this minute on Mars. And it's boggling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'll keep right on developing, and that will, you know, find that our universe is much bigger than we've ever anticipated that it is. And I don't know. I mean,
what about those core concepts of information science? Think they'll stay the same?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to change all that much, except that the medium, if the medium is the message, is going to change a great deal. I mean, the whole thing of being in instant contact worldwide. These little grandkids of mine are talking about having pen pals in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
The kind
mm-hmm.
of thing, I mean, just instant pen pals. You don't have to write letters or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to know the language. There's no problem. And, you know, we would never have thought of such things as kids, would we? So, you know, I think we're advancing in very indeterminate ways, the ways that our imaginations may not be able to grasp. Yeah. But there will always be people who are interested in something, and they want to find what there is about something. And that's the core of it all, don't you think?
Oh, and the core problems are still there, too, which
sure.
is how do you describe this information?
That's right.
How do you get to it amongst all the clutter of stuff that's there?
Yeah, I think the internet's going to put information science through its paces real good. It's going to get to be such a mess that nobody will want to use it, and then we have to salvage from there.
Well, early on, someone described the internet as all the libraries with all the book stacks in them all over the world turned upside down and the card catalog lost. And I don't think you can add to that all the archives and technical reports, collections, and
yes.
libraries.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sort of unfathomable how that's going to go.
Yeah, and fortunately at ACES, and I hope you'll come to some meetings, these kinds of discussions seem to be taking place about, though it's sometimes hard, I think, to keep track of those core concepts.
Tell them to make registration free to retirees,
I think they
and
should.
Maybe they could get some old-timers back again.
I will certainly suggest that.
Most old-timers are in the same situation as I. If I really, really wanted to, I could afford to go, but I find it superfluous, because about the only reason I'd go would be to talk to old acquaintances or something, and I'd learn a few things along the way. I'd be surprised, but I can't anticipate them in advance, and I'm not willing to part with my money to do
it. Well, $300 is a really high registration.
It's parting,
price.
Yeah.
Not to mention the hotel prices.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. I mean, I think twice about membership. It's $60 a year for retiring now.
Yeah.
And all I'm getting out of it are some journals, which I don't read. And people still have my address because I'm in the directory. And, but I'm not going to keep my member.
What have we not covered that you would like to cover or to say?
Oh, I think you've heard everything. But remind me to give you the paper I have on what I did at FASTSAB. It's detailed there.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
As I said, Dick rewrote it, and you'll see the difference in the two versions if you have enough patience to read both versions. And anyhow, you'll know that whole story, because I don't think you got that on tape.
Oh, right. That's what I mentioned. But anything else that you want to cover? Let me ask you while you're thinking, when you look back, what do you consider your major accomplishment in the field?
I was proud of my role in Medlars and what Medlars has accomplished. And I think, you know, leading up to when I was a consultant there, that the stuff I had done to show how people ask questions and how you should answer them and how you should have a vocabulary and how it should not be indebted kind of vocabulary and that kind of thing. I think all of that helped to influence some thinking enough that it affected how Medlars was conceived. Because I had been friends with Seymour Chain and had known Brad Rogers for years before, well, not Brad, but Chain. Brad I only knew for a very short time. I knew who he was and all that, but I didn't know him personally until just before he got interested in doing Medlars. I'm proud that I influenced him as much as I did. I'm glad I got up from the audience and made that speech. And I'm glad I got up and tackled Taub from the audience. It takes audacity to do that kind of thing. But it was part of my personality, and I'm sort of glad, because I think each of those things had an effect. Proud of what I did for the Federation, because nobody's ever followed through with that very much. I did get an article in the ACM about it, American, computer manufacturers or something, whatever ACM stands for.
Association of Computing Machines.
Machines. And that was funny, Association of Machines. But anyhow, I got some attention from that audience, but not very much. I don't know that it influenced very many people. Well, I think my teaching has influenced people. It's sort of like parenting does.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you did, but you know you did something.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I was just one of the players in the game at the time.
What strikes me is, I don't know about the first, it's always hard to pick out first, but you certainly were one of those early information retrieval researchers, not system developers, but researchers.
In what sense? What are you thinking of?
Trying to take a particular problem, like with vocabulary, building a vocabulary, how do you do that?
What works better than something else?
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at Perry and Kent and those folks, they probably would qualify as information retrieval researchers, but they were really more like system designers. Perry was trying to design that now what appears to me to be a very strange system with the telegraphic abstracts.
It was too little too late is the way I summed up what Perry did. He had this machine and it was a clunker before he got finished making it. It was just too late.
Talking about the Western Reserve Searching Selector.
And his abstract idea was too late because Loon's was better than that, imperfect as it was, and you know, that kind of thing.
What about that coding, strange coding system
that
he
had? That was too much.
What were those called? Those weren't the telegraphic abstracts, were they? They were the...
Yeah, he wrote telegraphic abstracts.
Yeah, no, but there was another...
The coding?
Coding that... I can't remember what the coding thing is, but that... struck me as really very complicated, but...
No, I think Perry's big contribution was being a missionary and going around and talking to people about all this stuff.
And lots of publications.
Yeah.
Of course,
and sort of held the hands of various people. Gene Garfield gives him credit for helping him get started in the field, and other people have said that Perry gave him a boost. So underneath, he was a kind person. He looked weird. You never saw him. I saw
the picture.
His hair standing on end and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he was a kind person. He did me a terrible disfavor. He expressed interest in what I was doing at Charbonneau very early on in the 50s, like 52. He came to visit me and told Madeline to come visit me and all that kind of thing. And then when I gave him thesis to publish in his 54, I think it was 54, punch card book, he didn't manage to get it in there. And then I was held over for 58. By 58, that was old stuff, and I had left Charbonneau already, and he just kept my light hidden under a bushel, and I was mad at him for that.
I wondered what happened, because you had written the thesis, and I wondered why you weren't in that first edition, and there you were in the 58th edition.
I'll never know. He just somehow didn't get it in there. But I thought that was a terrible decision.
Now, Madeline should know the answer to that question.
She might.
Because she edited the first edition.
She did.
That was her first job in the field, she said.
So, you know, there are all sorts of little things that influence.
Struck me was maybe the first information retrieval researcher who wasn't trying to develop a system to sell like Taub and Moores and Perry and those folks.
But I was that person? I never thought of that.
Well, I'm always skeptical about first, but just kind of...
I was interested in the problem rather than in the getting
system
it.
Design, right.
Rather than getting it. Well, I was interested in system design, too, but I wasn't interested in having my system be the system.
Oh, right.
And make me money or anything like that.
Well, anything by way of closing?
I don't think so. I feel fine.
I warn you out.
You must.